Welcome to the Heal Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Leona Allen, and I'm here to help you achieve more freedom in your health and your life. I'm the founder of Freedom Health Systems, and I've been a licensed chiropractor and wellness coach for over 2 decades. I've helped men, women, and children transform their lives by removing the physical, chemical, and emotional barriers to natural healing. Every week, I'll be taking you on a journey. A journey where you will discover the real truth behind what it takes to heal your mind, body, and soul. Allow me to be your guide as you travel this road to renewed health and a new life. It's time to make a deal with yourself to heal yourself. Please keep in mind that this podcast is for educational purposes only and not to be used as a replacement for medical diagnosis or treatment. With that said, let's begin. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Heal Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Leona Allen, and I'm here to help you achieve more freedom in your health and your life. And I am just real excited about my guest today. In a minute, I'm going to introduce her. But just know I've been looking forward to this because her message is in line with a lot of the things that I like to discuss and something I'm very passionate about. So I'm already looking forward to this conversation. And even, you know, things try to interfere and not allow it to happen. But we got through. We are connected. We didn't let technology mess this up. So we are here together on the Heal Deal Podcast. So let me start off with the intro. We have Susan Salinger. She is the author and researcher behind Sidelined: How Women Can Navigate a Broken Healthcare System. Sidelined examines the many ways in which some women manage and sometimes mismanage their healthcare. Susan explores how women, typically the medical gatekeepers for their families, tend to be extremely conscientious about taking care of themselves, yet at the same time, inadvertently undermine their own care. They often hesitate to call the doctor when they don't feel well and worry that their doctor's visit will take time away from their families or work. They may hesitate to ask doctors the necessary questions and don't always comply with the doctor's instructions. Salinger's research reveals how conflicted many women are about the medical decisions they ultimately make. Born and raised in Los Angeles, Susan attended UCLA to study English. After graduation, she worked alongside her husband, Fred, for 25 years at their production company, Salinger Films, which produced corporate training and development films distributed worldwide. Today, at the beautiful age of 80, Susan lives in Northern California.
I said 81. I had a
81. Oh my goodness. At the beautiful age of 81, Susan lives in Northern California to be near her incredible family, which includes her 2 daughters, 4 grandchildren, a cat named Max, and a dog named JD, when she is not speaking about her book or spending time with her family and friends, you will find Susan powerlifting, incredible to stay in shape. So for those of you who know me, that's probably the only time I'm going to read a script, but you know me, I'm very natural. We're just going to go with the flow and have a conversation. So welcome, Susan. It's great to have you. And before we go into this book, Sidelined, I mean, I can't wait to hear about this, but before we go into it, give me some insight about who you are and what led you to this wonderful project or this book that you had written?
Well, the journey on the book was actually kind of a saga. Many years ago, I mean, literally, it feels like 100 years ago. I was in my 20s, 30s. I don't even remember anymore. But I agreed to have some surgery that I knew I didn't need. I had recently changed medications for hormone medications for osteoporosis. And I started some vaginal bleeding. And I figured it had to be the pills. I mean, obviously to me anyway, but the doctor was sure, as I was so sure that it was the new medication, he was sure that it absolutely wasn't. And he thought I needed exploratory surgery. And for whatever reason, I agreed to have it. In fact, I insisted sooner rather than later. I guess I got scared. Anyway, they did the surgery. Everything was fine. I was right. It was the medication. I went back on the old medication and, lived healthily ever after. So, put that aside. I was a young mother with kids. I was working. So life goes on. And then many years later, after my husband and I sold our business, I retired for 2 or 3 seconds. I don't know what I was thinking. I was crazy. I was so bored. So I went back to school and took some anthropology classes, basically because that was all I could get into. I could get into, I think, accounting and anthropology. So and there was no way I was going to take accounting. I wasn't interested. So anyway, I did a project for one of my classes on women that had had hysterectomies. I'm not quite sure why I picked that subject, but I did. And much to my surprise, several of them had also agreed to the surgery, even though they didn't think they needed it. In fact, one woman was positive it was menopause, and from the way she described her symptoms, I'll bet she was right. But in any event, that of course was a trigger, and I remembered my own surgery so many years ago, and I really began to wonder how, as women, we make our medical decisions. What goes into that decision? Why do we keep allowing things to happen to us? Something particularly like surgery, and in their case, it was irrevocable. I mean, what makes us do that? So that was really the seed or the germ for the germ, whatever the term is, for the book. And I interviewed about 50 or 60 women, all with different diseases, and just tried to find out, what they had in common. I was interested in their behavior, not in the diseases particularly. And it sort of took off from there. I got really interested in the subject and started researching and writing. And before I knew it, I had a book. Not before I knew it took 10 years, but aside from
Yeah,
that.
because a lot of times it starts with our own story, and
Yes.
you feel like in the moment you're dealing with it alone, and then when you do start to explore an area, so I can't wait to get some insight on what you learned. So you said your surgery was a hysterectomy?
No, my surgery was just exploratory. I
Gotcha.
since I had the vaginal bleeding, I think the doctor was probably looking for ovarian cancer. And I mean, that was fair enough. I mean, if he had been right, he would have saved my life. But he wasn't. And I could have taken a week or two. I mean, I wasn't going to keel over in 24 hours, I could have gone for a second opinion. I could have gone back on the old meds just to see what happened. I mean, I had so many options. But yet I just threw all of them out, rushed into surgery, which can have its own repercussions. I mean, I was really lucky, and but I had anesthetic and I had to recover and, et cetera, et cetera. I wouldn't do that today. I'm older and wiser, and so
Right. Because it caught my eye when you did talk about hysterectomy, because I know you probably have some insight on this. It's just one of those surgeries where it's like the resort, especially when women are a certain age. Well, I'm not going to have babies, any more babies, so it's okay. But for
Right.
me, I'm like, well, that's what makes us a woman. Even as we get older and we don't plan to have children, I'm like, is there a better way? So sometimes we can get into this conversation is like, why do we allow something that drastic to happen? So
Right.
while I brought it up in your interview, have you ever come across that? How, women feel not the, I guess, the pressure to get a hysterectomy and their decisions. What kind of feedback did you get on that type of surgery? Because the clients I work with, that comes up quite a bit, even in my
Yeah,
practice.
I'm trying to think back, but yes, they had pressure. A lot of their pressure was because they had menopause symptoms, and a couple of the doctors told them that they needed a hysterectomy. As I said, and a couple of them didn't agree and went through with it anyway. And a lot of them, although and some of them did, some of them did need it and felt much better afterwards. But what was so interesting to me is that they all had some sort of repercussion. None of them that were aware that they were going to feel so depressed after the surgery. In fact, one woman told me she had asked the doctor so many questions, she felt like she could have performed the surgery herself. She asked technical questions, but she never asked about any emotional ramifications. And she was thrown in left field when she realized how depressed she was, because it messes up your hormones. I mean, in fact, for anybody out there that is getting a hysterectomy, and maybe people do this now, I don't know, but you should get a baseline on your hormones so that when they give you whatever they're going to give you to, that they give you the right proportion of whatever you need. Because we all need different, I mean, you're the doctor, you would know that more than me. But you don't want to go into it just blindly. Oh, yeah, you know, and you know, but they all said to me, and I thought this was so interesting, they all felt really badly. They were ashamed that they were so depressed because they said everyone has hysterectomies. This one's aunt, this one's grandmother, this one's mother. None of them realized, I mean, it's major surgery. It's called a procedure, but that's a euphemism. It's major surgery, and the recovery, particularly if they have to go in abdominally, it's really tricky. Abdominal surgery is not fun.
It's pretty serious, yeah. And that, and what you said was a key point, is like the women think that's the only option and everybody else is doing it. They don't get to see the women that still have their parts and their wisdom in their older age.
Right.
So that's really what gets me. And I like to look at, okay, what is causing the problem in the first place? It's just ripping out, but don't really address those concerns. Why are they having menopausal issues? Because I believe if we're born something, we should die with it.
Yeah, well, and honestly, I'm against any kind of medical procedure, surgery, unless you really need it. Obviously, if you need it, have it.
Right.
But wouldn't have cosmetic surgery either. I mean, I just don't want to be involved in anything that is where you need anesthetics, where you need recoveries. I mean, Joan Rivers died. There's other women that have died from what they went into thinking it was just a, you know, relatively simple procedure. And stuff happens, let's face it.
Yeah.
Best way to stay healthy is to not go in for surgery, you know.
Yeah. Right. And that's what we need more focus on. It's like, be healthy, because especially as women, we feel so much pressure to look good when we wake up, look good when we go to bed, look good when we age, look good when we're pregnant, look good when we're tired.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're absolutely right. It's so true. I didn't find that as much. What I did find, that what interested me, is the amount of caretaking that we do for other people. And it segues into what you said, because of course we take such good care of other people that we don't take always the best care of ourselves. And the women, even that had hysterectomies, didn't have the time to do their research, or, you know, it, whatever. That's, I think, taking care of ourselves has to be our first priority. I really do.
Exactly. I agree 100%. But it's like the surgeries are quick. It's like, okay, let's get it over with so I can get back to caregiving.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So many of them wanted physical relief, because some of them were in pain. And as I said, they did need it. That they just wanted immediate relief, but they didn't do enough research to realize what was, I mean, they still would have had to have the surgery, but at least if they'd known what it entailed, they wouldn't have been so upset and so ashamed of themselves for feeling so poorly afterwards.
Yeah. And do you believe a lot of it's coming from, like in your research, do you believe a lot of the issues that we get when we end up needing this medical assistant, do you think it comes from not taking care of ourselves, being a caregiver and putting everybody else's needs before our own? Do you think that's a commonality with the women you have interviewed?
Yes, that was one of the major commonalities, actually. This is funny, but it's sort of not funny at the same time. There was a study done where researchers gave women a list of five things to prioritize. You know, what or who would they take care of first? And first, they took care of their children. And then secondly, they took care of their pets. And that really surprised me. I know, isn't that funny? Third, they took care of their elderly parents. And I must say, as an elderly parent myself, I really resented that I was number three on the list, you know. But anyway, number four, they take care of their significant others. And last, they take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And my position is you have to take care of yourselves first, because I think it's really hard to take care of others when you're feeling like crap. You know, you're tired, you're irritable, whatever you are, stressed. You don't, it's hard to take care of other people when you're not feeling in tip-top condition.
I agree with that 100%. We put ourselves last.
Yes, we do. Even the airlines, they tell you to put your own mask on before you put on your, I mean, but they have to make it a point to tell you that. So meanwhile, you'll put on your kids first and you'll keel over because you don't have any oxygen. I mean, you
Yeah.
got to put yours on first. It's the same principle, really.
That is really interesting. So I want to repeat that. So you said usually in their list of priorities, it was their children, their pets, their elderly or aging
That's right.
parents, spouses, and then themselves.
Right.
Wow. So those listening need to see, where they are putting their priorities at. That is really important because I think a lot of us, because I've been guilty of that as well.
So have
I
I.
thought it was being selfish. How
Yes.
dare I,
Yes.
take care of me, take time for me.
Right.
But I'm
Exactly.
realizing now it's selfish if you don't. I need to be there
Right.
for my kids. It's
And I
not fair to
think
my
it makes.
kids.
I think when you do take time for yourself, both physically and emotionally, it enables you to be much more present, much more on the spot. And that's significant.
So was that kind of how you were? Because if you were, what how are some ways that you overcame going from caregiver role to actually taking care of yourself and power lifting and all that good stuff? I want to hear more about that. That's
Oh,
incredible.
that's my favorite thing to talk about. But that's a good question. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, I'm as guilty of taking care of my children first as in, as the one way I handled is my kids grew up and it got to be a lot easier. They got old. They either were teenagers or adults and they were out of the house one way or the other. So that really made it easier. But I was guilty of that too. But the reason I started the powerlifting, and I think one of the things that kind of woke me up to taking care of myself was in my early 40s, I think, I was diagnosed with osteoporosis. And I got really scared because they told me that I was going to be one of those older women that stepped off a curb and my bones would shatter. And I thought, not me, there is no way. And I really got scared. So I started paying more attention to my diet. I looked up what I needed to do exercise wise, and I started resistance training. I started, well, the treadmill and walking, I'm terrible at, but I try. The powerlifting I really like. I'm competitive with myself and I love powerlifting because you start at 2 pounds and then you go to 5 pounds, you can 8 pounds, 10, you see your progress and that's cool. Walking I just find so boring, but I try because it's good for me. I mean, it's you pound your feet on the pavement and it's good for your bones. You guys should all go check out my website on TikTok. It's called Grandma.Gains, Gains, like gaining muscle. My grandchildren named it. I didn't know what the hell it meant. But they told me that everybody else did but me, and I didn't know because I was old. We were having a generation gap, they carefully explained. So anyway, it's called Grandma Gains. And you'll see, I mean, I'm really strong. I can't open my own applesauce, but I can bench press.
Love it. 81 and you're powerlifting. Yeah, I'm
Yeah,
definitely
no,
gonna
I'm
have all
good.
your contact and websites in the show notes, but definitely I'm gonna check that out because that motivates me. Cause it's
Sure.
like I'm in my 50s, but it's amazing seeing women in their 30s and 40s like, my life is over. I'm like, what are you talking about? You're just beginning.
Oh, I
So
agree so much. Well, and it's so interesting because what my trainer said, I'm also very small. You can't tell because I'm sitting down, but I'm only 4'10. I weigh 103 pounds. So, and here I am, this little old woman. And what's so interesting to me, just as a researcher, I guess, is a lot of the other women that are on TikTok who are weightlifters. I mean, they are really buffed. I mean, they go to the gym five, six, seven times. I mean, they work out. I work out too, but I mean, not like that. I work out 3 times a week or 4 times a week sometimes. But I mean, it's amazing how fit you can become without being a true gym freak,
Yeah,
that I
I
couldn't do, I
completely
guess.
agree. Yeah, you don't have to be in there 4 times a day,
No,
every day of the week. It doesn't take
right.
much,
And these
just do
women,
it.
they look terrific, though. They really do. I mean, it's really paid off. I just wanted to be clear that I am not, I mean, I actually don't like to exercise. I get bored, but I do like what it does for me. And I'm very healthy as a result. I move like a
Yeah.
much younger woman. I
I
mean,
mean,
I
it
have more
shows.
energy.
I mean, you're a great example of what 81 can lo look like, and
Right,
people need to
right.
see that.
Well,
Right.
some of it's good luck too. I mean, I haven't been hit by a bus or, what I mean?
Golly.
So, although I'm sure at this point I could probably bench press that bust right off of my body.
Absolutely. You're funny. I knew this interview was going to be fun.
Nobody would dare hit me, right?
That's where it comes with, with wisdom. You're just, hey, it's like your approach is different. Your outlook is different. I love it. I love it. I'm enjoying this. So let's go back to sideline.
Yes.
So,
Oh, yes.
I mean, I think it's all relate. I tell you, I just like to have a conversation and go with the flow, and my listeners are used to that as well. But with sideline, you caught my attention with the hysterectomy and the caregiving and how that's all connected. What are some other like key points and lessons, things that either you were able to relate to or things that you found that you weren't aware of that was happening between our relationship as women and with our relationship with our doctors? What else have you learned from
I
that?
think the thing that actually, out of everything that surprised me the most, was the amount of shame that so many women feel when they become ill. And I don't feel that. I get really angry when I get sick. I get pissed off at the world. You wouldn't want, I'm like, I turn into like Nurse Ratched, except that I'm the patient. I mean, it's horrible. But most of the women I interviewed felt so much shame around being ill. The way it turned out after exploring the topic a little bit, that so many of the women thought that their illness was due to stress, that they couldn't handle their stress, and that's why they got sick. So the way they saw their illness was that it was like a public advertisement of, look, everybody, I can't handle my life. You can see I'm sick, and it's because I'm just a stress case. And while it's true that stress can make you ill, it certainly lowers your it can lower your immune system, but it doesn't all. I mean, illness is random. Some people get COVID and some don't, and some alcoholics get liver disease and some don't, et cetera, et cetera. I have to tell the story of my father-in-law here. We're just talking about my exercise. This is a man that never exercised, ate nothing but red meat, wouldn't look at a vegetable, smoked cigars daily, and lived to be like 84, 85, perfectly healthy until he died. Then he wasn't so healthy. But it's just illness is you certainly can cause your own illness. I'm not saying that you can't. I'm obviously, if you smoke, you do have a higher risk of lung cancer. But not everybody that smokes gets lung cancer, and people get lung cancer who don't smoke. I mean, there's no way to really to know. And I think that I think that it's so hard to blame yourself and to feel so ashamed and to almost lose your sense of self because you need a hysterectomy or because you got breast cancer or whatever your particular disease is. And the shame, how do I say this? The shame carried went one step further, and that none of the women that I talked with, or very few, really talked about their illness with everybody else. This is interesting. I put together a couple of focus groups just because I wanted some geographical diversity. And it turned out I hired a facilitator. I mean, I did everything right. And it turned out that most of the women, we didn't even need the facilitator. I mean, most of the women were so happy to listen and to talk to one another, because almost, I think hardly any of them had ever talked with their illness about their illness with anybody else other than their doctor. And they were so blown away because the illness itself is irrelevant. We all have the same feelings of not wanting to put ourselves first, of feeling ashamed, of whatever you're never alone in what you're feeling, or very rarely anyway. So that was a real eye opener for me. I was shocked. Still am a little bit, frankly.
And shame is a big one. I'm glad you brought that up. And I was
A
giggling when
huge
you
one.
said angry. I mean, that's not funny, but I was kind of like giggling because if I'm not feeling well, I'm just like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah,
I'm the
me.
same
That's exactly me. Oh my God. How dare that I lose a day of my life to this cold? Are they kidding me?
I got things to do. Like, what
I
is
know, places to
this?
go, people to see. I know,
Everybody's like, just
I
rest. I'm
agree.
like, no, I'm
Yes,
Superwoman.
exactly.
Yeah, it just like I had my own personal health story, and it forced me to be like, okay, if I'm not feeling good, it's okay, just rest it out. But I
Right.
get it, I get it. That's why I was kind of giggling a little bit with that. But like I said, the shame is very common, and women really don't have. They feel like they don't have a place where they can share what's going on. And even when they do share with their doctor, it's kind of like, some doctors, they're like, oh, it's all in your head. And,
Right,
they're not really getting it. They feel like they're alone in a situation. But
yeah.
then when you're talking to, the people you research and interview, and the commonality I have with the clients I work with, a lot of them are very similar, but they don't know that they have what they're dealing with, other people are dealing with. And I
Right,
think there's
right,
strength in not having a pity party or anything, but
right.
just having a place where I tell people all the time, if you don't feel bad sometimes, don't feel shame, just kind of rest in it sometimes.
Yes.
Let it process, because we get to that point like us, oh, I don't have time for this, and we don't want to process it. But
Right,
some
right.
people want to hide behind it. They don't want to know that other people to know they have a bad day, or they're feeling weak, or they can't be there for someone else or do something. So I
Definitely.
think that's the problem, where we got to be okay with, we're going to have good days, we're going to have bad days, and that's just a part of life.
You know what surprised me too, just talking about putting yourselves last and caretaking. Women do 80 or 85% of all the caretaking in the world. I mean, I'm not just talking in America, in the world. That really, that surprised me too. That's a big statistic. I mean, really. It transcends cultures, apparently. You know, that's interesting.
I believe it. I believe it. Yeah, it's like we're just trying to be strong for everybody else,
Right.
but we have
Right.
nothing for ourselves, or we get
Right.
angry at ourselves like we
Yes.
did.
Oh, yes. Oh, I know. So funny.
Oh man, she was like, why is she laughing? I was just relating, that's all. Oh my gosh. Woo, I could go on and on with you. So with your experience, so when did this journey start for you? I think you said you started powerlifting at 40. So when did this all turn around for you? Because I lost track when you had the surgery. I don't quite remember when that was.
I guess, but I don't know quite what you mean by turn around, but when I got the when I was diagnosed with the osteoporosis, I
In your
got frightened.
40s.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm sure you know osteoporosis has no symptoms, so I was feeling fine, and I just go in for a regular checkup, and I came out feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to be crippled. That was not a good day. So that's really when this all started. And then when I took the anthropology classes, and I learned a lot about women's health, and there is a lot of gender bias in the medical community, not just against women. I don't quite mean it that way. That's my whole second book. But the women researchers get less research. We know less about women's diseases than we do about men's. So some of the it's all in your head that goes on is because we just don't know any differently. Anyway, so I got all involved in that. So,
And you brought up another question. So have you found any difference with the relationship between women and male doctors and female doctors? Have you noticed anything different?
well, there's been some research. That's kind of an interesting question. One of the questions I'm always asked is, am I better off with a male doctor or a female doctor? And you know, when I started the book, the jury was out, and it didn't seem to be make much difference. But now I think it seems to be that women are better off with a female doctor. But on the other hand, I mean, I want to be clear about this. There are also relationship differences between men and women doctors. In other words, a woman doctor spends more time. The office visit will be longer, and they spend more time talking about you. And that can sound lovely unless you're on your lunch hour and you want to get in and get out, in which case you're better off with a male doctor. You know, if you want to just get your business taken care of and get the hell out of there, a woman doctor may not be your best bet. But I have to say also, it's such a tricky question, and it doesn't seem like it is, but yet it is. Because the most important thing in a relationship with a doctor is your relationship with the doctor. the more comfortable you are with your doctor, the more symptoms you will relate, the more questions you will ask, the more likely you are to comply with whatever the treatment recommendation is. So if you, I have both men and women doctors, and I only go to doctors that I feel connected to, or and I feel who like me. And if I feel they're a jerk, I mean, I simply don't go back, you know.
Right. So another question. So what would you recommend for women that are listening out there and they want to pick a doctor or, inquire? What would you be your advice to them when seeking out medical assistance?
That's a good question. I think what I do and what I have done is let's assume, in fact, I moved up here about, I'm in north of San Francisco, and I moved up here about 10 years ago, and I didn't know anybody, so I couldn't get any personal recommendations. And so I was shocked at myself, but I just went on the internet and I found a couple of names because I don't even know how I found them anymore. But the first thing I did once I had a name is I researched them. I wanted to know where they did their training, what was their specialty, and that's all available. I don't know what I would have done without, the internet, seriously. But where did they train? Are they, if you have a heart problem, you might want somebody whose specialty is cardiology. If you have diabetes, you might want an endocrinologist or whatever. And the other thing that I paid attention to was what hospital they were affiliated with. Because again, I'm in the San Francisco area. There's a ton of hospitals. Some are good. Some are, let me just say, some are better than others. I'm going to be tactful here. And I wanted to know. And also, hospitals have specialties. Again, if you want a hospital, if you have a heart problem, you want a hospital that does a lot of heart issues. And I mean, if you have diabetes, you want something else, or cancer, you want a cancer clinic or whatever. So that was important to me too. So I researched the doctor and I researched the hospital. And, at the back of my book, and actually, this is the most important thing I'm going to say, is at the back of the book, there's a big resource list. And I really worked hard on that. It tells you how to research your doc. I've done the work for you. You just go to research my doctor or research how to, hospitals are rated. And some get A's for heart attack, but C's for something else. And you want to know what the rating is of the hospital that you're going to go to for whatever you need. Obviously, if you have a heart problem, you want to go to a hospital that has an A rating in cardiology. You certainly wouldn't want to go to one with a D rating. I mean, obviously. So I think it's really important to do your research, and I cannot say that enough. And that way, also, when you go in, you're prepared. You know who they are and what's going on, and it's important. Why is this? My phone is ringing. I turned it off. Just, oh, you know what it is? It's my watch is ringing. That's what was happening. Sorry.
It's all right.
You promised you could edit it, so
I might not. People
whatever
see
you want.
how real she is, y'all.
Wait, I did everything right. I've got my landline turned off, my cell phone turned off,
See
and
what
the damn
happens?
watch goes. I'm too much technology.
I
That's funny. Sorry.
I might keep it in here so they'll get a giggle. But I'm glad you answered it in that way, because even though on my standpoint, I want people to take more in, from where I come from, I want people to take more control of their health, and so they have less doctor's visits. But people listen to this podcast, and a lot of them, I have no idea who they are, so I'm not like anti-medicine or anything like that,
Right.
but I want them to understand if that's the path they choose to take, yes, do some research. Even with a lot of the holistic doctors, do your research. But that
Yeah,
was
it's
the key
important.
word you said. We just make the decisions and believe the first person we can get on their appointment,
Well,
and we trust
I
that.
think it's just one of the things I always say when you go to the doctor and go to your doctor visit, and he or she or they give you a diagnosis, you want the clinical name of that disease so that you can go home and look it up and find out exactly what the symptoms are and what the prognosis is and what tests you need and did you have those tests. It will give you a real feeling of control if you get the information that you need. to really, I don't want to say plan your own program because you're not the doctor, and I didn't go to medical school, and many people out there didn't as well. But I think it's very important to know what you have, what you need to do about it. How was it diagnosed? Did you really have all of the tests you need? And I would always get a second opinion. I mean, if something serious was, I mean, oh my. So many people don't. So many, in fact, this is something you guys should know too, is a lot of the women I talked with said they would never get a second opinion because they didn't want to, well, hurt their doctor's feelings, and they didn't want the doctor to think they were being a difficult patient. And big mistake, big mistake.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
really important to get one, and I'll tell you why. First of all, which I didn't know until I did my own research, but there's about 30 to 40,000 different diseases out there. So many times, I mean, if you break a leg, and your leg hurts, the diagnosis is obvious. But many times, it's like looking for a needle in the haystack. And one of the things I found out is perceptual bias comes in. I mean, a stomach, the same symptoms to a gastroenterologist will look like stomach pains, and to a psychologist, they'll say you're stressed. The rheumatologist will say, well, you probably have pain from arthritis or whatever. So we all see what we expect to see into what we're accustomed to seeing. So a second opinion, you want a different opinion, and you want a whole different perspective. I would, when I get a second opinion, I always go to somebody totally in a different, I mean, if the doctor that I doctor the first doctor was trained at UCLA, I'd like the second one to be trained in New York or at SC or something totally different. I wouldn't go to somebody in the same office. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's
I
good
don't know if you
advice.
agree with that, because
Yeah, that's really good advice. So we do have to get control back and be involved in those decisions. It's so important. I know somebody needs to hear that today. So you said that Sideline is a series. So tell me more about how the book is laid out and where they can find the book. So you said it's a series, correct?
No, it's one book. I'm working
Oh,
on
okay.
a second book. It's not a series, but eventually I'll sell them together. I'm working on right now a book on gaslighting. But you can find the book on Amazon or really any
Okay.
store that where books are sold, and if they don't have it, they can order it. But and there's several books under Sidelined. So it's Sidelined: How Women Can Navigate a Broken Healthcare System. Or just use my name, it's Salinger. Oh, it's Salenger. It's a little different spelling, which has tripped people up a couple times. But I think it's a resource book that people should, I mean, seriously, I do. And frankly, I would get the paperback so that you can, I mean, it comes in Kindle. But if you get the paperback, you want it by your bed. It tells you what to do when you go to the doctor, how to handle the office visit. The research part is critical. People laugh at me when I talk about research, but it's really important. Do I have time for a quick story, or am I talking
Oh,
too
no, you got time. Go ahead.
much? I always talk too much. But anyway,
This is
so I've
great.
never had pain. I'm one of the really lucky. I've told this story so many times. I hope nobody's heard it before. But anyway, never have pain. I'm one of the really lucky people, and I know it. It's genetic, and what can I say? So, I mean, I'm 80 and or 81 at this point. Stuff happens. But I woke up one morning with a really sore thumb, and I thought, oh, I probably slept on it wrong. Whatever you think. Anyway, a month later, the damn thing still hurt. So I, of course, thought it was bone cancer because once you do all this research, you have every disease that you research, So I went to the doctor. It turned out to be an arthritis doctor. And she said, no, you just have arthritis in your thumb. Okay, no problem. And she said, let me give you this medication for the pain. And I said, great. And I said, incidentally, I'm on Lexapro for depression. Will the two drugs be okay together, or do they interact, or what's the story? And she said, no, you'll be just fine. Well, here I am. I've written this book. So I go home and I look up, do my research, and I look up the medication she gave me. And honestly, she was 99% right. But the 1% was there was a chance of a brain bleed. So now I'm thinking, I've got this thumb. I haven't even yet taken a Tylenol. Am I really going to take a chance? I mean, if you're the 1% and you get a brain bleed, I mean, no, thank you. So my point being that she was right. She really mostly. But what if? And she, so in other words, I really wasn't told all the risks. I was told the benefits, but not all the risks. And that would, I mean, to get a brain bleed, because when, over a thumb, and not only that, it was my right thumb and I'm left-handed, so I'm not even sure I would have cared, but that's the importance of research. And in fact, I think I put that in the book. I can't remember now, but
Yeah. I'm glad you
research.
brought up that story, because that one, they got that 1% from somewhere. And just
Sure.
think, 1% of how many? It could be thousands. That 1%
Well,
could be thousands, hundreds of thousands.
years ago, my a friend of mine, personal friend of mine, got a shingle shot, and I think it's like 1 or 2% of people have a reaction. Well, she was the 1 or 2%. She was in the hospital for like, 8 months. I mean, it was terrible. So you just know, you have to be damned. I mean, if it's cancer, you don't have a chance. I mean, you don't have a choice. So of course you do what you need to do. But for a thumb, I don't think so. At least I wouldn't,
Yeah, and it's amazing how people don't look at side effects, and some people just get their prescription, don't even know what they're taking it for. They're
Yes,
just like, this is what I was prescribed.
right,
If I have an
exactly.
issue with that, they're like, well, why are you taking this? And
Right.
then a lot of things that they do is it could be a cancer med, but they're also using it for depression or something like that. So yes, it's
Right.
crazy. So, because I know you said navigating a broken healthcare system. So, what have you found broken in this
Well, I
system?
just think that as women, we frequently get the short end of the stick when it comes to care. I know that, for example, women wait in the hospital if a man and a woman come in with the same heart attack symptoms, let's say, the man will be seen first and the woman will wait 11 or 15 minutes longer. And frankly, with a heart attack, time is of the essence. I know that women's pain is treated. For men's pain will be treated first, and women sometimes aren't treated at all. They're told that it's all in their heads, or they're given a pain medication, but a very small dosage. We tend sometimes not to be believed, and not always, not always. I'm not against doctors at all, on the contrary, as a matter of fact. But I think that the system is broken as far as women are concerned. Women researchers, for example, get less research funds. They're published less often in the journals. So we really know a lot less about women's bodies. It's much better than it used to be. But the standard research researcher and the research subject is generally white men. Black women are left out, black men are left out, transgender are left out. I mean, it's really it's not good, because the white male is not necessarily an appropriate standard. I'm frequently given the same dose of medicine when I went to have a colonoscopy, and they gave me this big thing to swallow. It's the same bottle they give to everybody. Well, I'm 4'10", and somebody else can be 6'5", and we have the same dosage. So obviously, I only took half, but anyway, don't do that. I got mad.
Yeah, because every time you
Really, yeah.
answer, I have another question. So, like, race is a big issue, and I know a lot of it's based on white men, but have you found in your research a difference in like communities, in Black African American communities, Black communities, Black women versus white men, women? Have you found any differences in your research in regards to race and not just
Yes,
gender, but also race?
I have, because of the second book, not because of the first one. But Black women, Latin women are definitely gaslit and disbelieved far more than white women. White women are, we don't do as well in the treatment department as white men, but we do a hell of a lot better than Black women, Indigenous women, transgender. I mean, white women are second best, so to speak, and so there is a big difference. And what I really found that was I found shocking, frankly, is that so many doctors and residents have misunderstandings of the differences between mostly Black women and white women. They feel that Black women's blood is thicker, or they don't feel pain as intensely, so they are given less pain medication. It's a problem. It's really a problem. And part of that, most of that is due to the lack of research. That's my whole point in my book is that gaslighting or being gaslit is a product of the structure of the medical system. That's book two. I shouldn't even be going on about it. But nevertheless, to answer your question, yes, if Black women are having a heart attack, white women wait 11 minutes longer to get treated. Black women wait 15 to 20 minutes longer.
Yeah, I believe it. Even in childbirth, I know in my research has been an issue. Oh, you know, yeah. If we tend to complain of pain, we get overlooked more because yes. For some reason they believe that we don't feel pain.
Right, so I know, overlooked. Exactly. Yeah. And Black women, I read somewhere that they think Black women's blood coagulates either less often or more often. It doesn't matter, but you know, that it coagulates differently from white women. I mean, come on.
I mean, I've heard about that too. I've seen it, I've experienced it. And I think that's why, you know, some of us are a little bit skeptical. We, you know, that's why as Black women, we're like, I ain't going.
Yeah, no, sure, no. And that's one of the,
I'm one of them, you.
I wouldn't either. I really wouldn't. And listen, some doctors too are just jerks. I mean, that does happen. I don't care if you're talking about hairdressers or plumbers or doctors or teachers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but I don't know. I've lost my point, but anyway.
Yeah. No, this is good. So I really recommend this book, everybody. Sideline and look out for gaslighted or gaslight. That is, well, that's going to be good.
That'll be a couple of years, believe me.
A couple of years. Hurry up.
Well, I know I need to. I really want my research to be right.
I know. Research does take time.
It does take time. And I get lost in the bowels of the internet.
Gosh, man, I can't wait for that. I'll be patient, but I'll get my copy in the meantime. Because you piqued my interest. Because I don't want to read it at first because I like the interview to be as organic and natural as possible. Yeah. And then I was like, then I'm gonna get it. So probably have you back on again because after I read it, we can address some of these topics. Because I think people need to know this. Research is so important. I like research physiology and how nutrition works on the body.
Yes,
people need to know this as well, what they're really dealing with and who they're trusting with these
truly
decisions.
Think the best way to take control of your health is to do your research.
Yeah.
When you don't feel well, go to the doctor. Don't mess with yourself and say, well, I don't have time. I've got this to do or that to do. I've got a project at work or my kids, whatever. Go, because otherwise a minor problem becomes a major one and you don't want that.
Right. I agree 100%. But this is good. Like I said, I'm going to have all your information in the show notes so people can find your book, find your Grandma Gain videos.
Yeah. That's so fun.
So, because you're an inspiration, you know, it's like take care of yourself now. It's like a lot of people in my age group and younger is like they're giving up. I'm like, what are you doing? You don't know how much you got to live. You might as well take care of yourself now so you can enjoy and be feisty. Susan here, you know.
You know, Jane Fonda said in some podcast I was listening to that the best way to get older, the best way to prepare for old age is to prepare for it. And she's absolutely right. You know, look at her. She's 85, 80, whatever. She looks great.
Yeah.
She really does. Yeah.
She sure does. So
that's my parting message.
Okay, I was going to ask you what your parting message was. You got another one?
Well, I do. I have two. I mean, right, number one, don't parting messages. Don't give up. I mean, I'm starting a new book and I'm 81. I mean, come on. Secondly, is take charge of your own health and go to the doctor, but be informed. So when you go to the doctor, you know what you're hearing. Get all the information you can and then go home and check it out. And get a second opinion before you do anything to your body like a hysterectomy without, you know, you've got to check it out. You want to be damn sure that you're doing the right thing for yourself. Yes.
Good closing. Body. I got a closing one too. It's like, and you're never too old. Don't give up. Write that book. You know, get out there. Live your life. Do some power lifting. Okay. So, man, this was a fantastic interview. And I'm going to see you again, especially after I read this book. Okay.
I'll
I got
come
your
back in a
number.
heartbeat, I promise. Thank you
I
so
got your
much.
number, especially with
Have a
disparities, because in my following, there's they're mainly Black women that listen to
Yeah.
me, and they need to understand. They understand the disparities, but to see the research, oh, I
Oh
think that
yeah.
can get, yeah, I think
No.
that's important to be aware of.
Yeah, no, it's really serious. One of the things I promise I'll be quiet, but one of the things that that I did read is that when Black women go in for pain medication and stuff, that they're accused of just wanting the drugs. And I mean, I'm thinking, oh my God, these poor women, they're in such pain. It's terrible. It's just terrible. That's one of the things I'm addressing in book two.
Okay. Hurry
Yeah,
up.
promise.
Get
Promise.
it done. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
Do your
promise.
research. It's gonna be good. I'm looking forward to that. But I'm gonna get sidelined in the meantime. We're gonna have a second interview on that. But anything else before I close? This has been a wonderful, wonderful time. Anything
Thank you.
else before I
Thank
close it
you.
out?
It's
Okay.
your body, your choice. That's it.
Yes. Take care of it. It's the only one you get.
Got it.
So, Susan Salinger, thank you. Thank you so much for spending this time with me and just being yourself and open and just sharing your knowledge. And to my listeners, if you have any questions, comments, don't forget to put in the comment section. Let us know what you think of this interview. And until next time, wait, before that, check the resources, get her book, and how you
Thank
can
you.
contact her. And until next time, go out there and achieve more freedom in your health and your
Yes.
life. Take care. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, seal the deal to heal by leaving a review, subscribing to the podcast, and sharing with a friend. Thanks again, and we'll continue the journey next week.